Spoonful of Paolo, here we go.
Hey everyone, I'm Paolo, and welcome to Spoonful of Paolo. Now today, we have a special episode because I am gonna be talking with the one and only host from MSNBC's The Readout, Joy Reid. You guys, it's our first interview in person in 2 years. So let's go listen to Joy's inspiring and amazing story. See you with Joy. Okay, so you ready?
I'm ready.
I have to say, Joy Reid, I am so excited to be here with you in person because this means so much to me and my husband because we're a huge fan of yours. And so thank you for taking the time to be here. Thank you so much.
Paolo, thank you so much. It's been so great meeting both of you.
Oh, thank you.
I think you guys are a wonderful couple. Oh. I love your story.
Thank you.
You know, I had to interview you first before you interviewed me. So I got the whole backstory, the love story.
You got
story,
my backstory.
And I love the love story.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I've been waiting to say this to you, but congratulations on being the first Black woman to anchor a primetime news on MSNBC. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Take that in. What was that moment like for you? Because when that was announced, Joy, I remember there was this huge love and support for you, you know? Did you feel it? What were you feeling? Because we, when they announced it, we were crying. Like, no one deserves this more than you. So what did that moment feel like for you?
It felt great because the thing is, that was the most beautiful part of it, is that I got so much love, right? Mm. So I'm a member of the Lynx. The Lynx threw a watch party.
Yeah.
You know, you had, like, women who were reaching out to me saying that I'm going to have my daughter watch. Mm. I'm going to have my 10-year-old watch. I'm gonna watch with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, it was beautiful to get the love. It was also a little intimidating because I felt a responsibility because when you're kind of out there, you can't mess up.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be perfect. You have to do it right. And so it gave me an extra sense of responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I was so proud. I was so grateful. And then what's even more beautiful about it is I'm in this moment where, you know, I have a Black woman who's a boss, who's my boss, who's also made history.
Yeah.
I have a Latino man who is her boss, who's also made history. It's just sort of a moment, you know, it's a moment.
It is a moment indeed. And you're a perfectionist because I remember the first episode, it was on July 20, 2020, and you interviewed, in one episode, you interviewed then presidential candidate Joe Biden. You had Hillary Clinton, you had our mayor, Mayor Lightfoot.
Yes.
I mean, what was it like to interview these powerful people in one day on your first episode?
Yeah.
Like, that was cool.
No, it was a lot. And the thing is, I am a prodigious note taker. Mm. And so literally the first thing to go into those interviews, because I do get a little nervous. It's like, I have to get this right. Right, because I'm like, you only have 10 minutes. What am I going to ask?
In that segment.
Right. It's like, I have to make my questions right. I have to try to get something for the audience that they haven't heard a million times. So I had all my notes. And so if you could have like scrolled down to see what was in front of me, it was like paper, 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 piles of paper.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean?
But it was so cool because you're like, you're just going on from the next one to the next powerful person, the next one. Like, okay, this girl, she's so good. And what's so cool is a few months ago, you had a sit-down exclusive interview with Vice President Harris.
Yeah.
So how do you think, how has Joy changed since that interview that she did with her from your first interview with Joe Biden? How do you think, how have you changed, you think?
You know what? I think I've had a chance to start to take it in more. When you first launch the show, you're just focused on how do I make the show perfect?
Mm.
How do we change the format? How are we doing our writing, making it perfect? And you don't take it in.
Mm.
You know, you're not really taking in the process. I have to tell you, interviewing Vice President Harris, it was one of the most profound experiences for me.
Why?
Not just because of her. She's a wonderful person. Mm. I met her first when she was a senator. She's as down. She could sit here with us and kiki with us.
Yeah.
She is as normal and wonderful as it's, you know, I used to say this about Michelle Obama. It's like if your cousin became first lady. She's like if your cousin became vice president. So she's a cool person. But think about interviewing your cousin.
Yeah.
But you walk up onto this massive plane.
Mm.
You walk in and it's an office.
Mm.
It's basically an office in the sky. And then you walk up and there's that seal.
Mm.
That seal that's that symbol of power.
Mm.
And it's this Black lady's plane.
Wow.
And I walked up and I had a whole plan in mind, you know, notes. I was sitting there scribbling my notes. I had my producers next to me and I was working, figuring out. And I had a whole plan, had a whole dignified plan. And I got up there and I really, It really caught my throat. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I had to compose myself because when I saw this Black woman sitting there with this incredible multiracial staff, her staff is somebody from every group that you can possibly think of, from every demographic. They're all unfurled around her. She's leading the meeting.
Wow.
And then over her head is that seal. I had to stop for a moment. So I think what's changed from then to now is that I take those things in and that I kind of take them in publicly, you know, because I had my reaction on camera and we used it. We ended up using it because I was like, I'm not going to cut that out because that's how I genuinely felt.
I love that you take it in because that's what you have to, because you've done so many interviews. And at this point, you're like, you know what? I've done this for almost 2 years just for the readout. Yeah. Like, I got to do this. What advice would you give yourself to Joy, who just started on MSNBC, I think as a contributor back in 2011?
Yeah.
So what advice would you give yourself who just started on MSNBC, would you say, with everything you know now?
Yeah, I would say don't be so self-critical. Mm. I am very self-critical. I will go back and the only thing I'll remember from an interview is that I stumbled over a word or an intro that I did, that I stumbled, I didn't do it properly. Mm. And so I was super self-critical. I would say, even if you're just starting out, the advice that I would give young me is to actually allow yourself to make mistakes. You can stumble and bumble. It's okay. It's like playing the piano. My piano teacher, Mr. Simmons, used to always say,
I remember the name.
Most people don't know the words, darling. Just keep playing. Because most people don't know the music, right? If you're playing like classical music, everyone doesn't know every note. Yeah. There might be two people in the audience that know every note. Mm-hmm. Most people don't. Just keep playing. Don't stop. Just keep playing.
That's okay. I have to remember that because sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit too hard on myself when I make mistakes. So, and my husband's the one who, it's okay, Paolo. Like, you learn from your mistakes and don't be so hard because I'm so hard on myself. Yeah. I want everything to be perfect. I have my notes. Sometimes you just have to let it go.
Let it go. Well, the only place that I'm still extremely self-critical is the thing I've not mastered and I'm going to need help from somebody at some point is red carpets. I did this red carpet this weekend and all I'm doing is going through the Getty photos saying, why do you look so stiff? What are you doing? This is absolutely wrong. Like, how I can do it in front of a mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
I can do it for a selfie. Yeah. Red carpets are like my kryptonite. I can't do it. I can't figure it out.
That's so interesting.
It's so hard. Oh, it's much harder than it looks.
Don't look
right
at the photos online. Just look at the photos that you take of yourself or that your team takes of you.
That's why I like selfies. I get the perfect angle. I got the perfect light. It's It's like the red carpet. I hate it.
You know what I love about you is that your voice is so powerful. And I think what we're dealing with right now, especially with the January 6th committee hearings, which you and your team is doing an amazing job in MSNBC. And I really want every American person out there to, there's no excuse, you should be watching these hearings.
Yes.
But what I love about you is your voice is so powerful, and that not only do you bring, you know, your Harvard educated excellence and your professionalism every day to the show, but you bring your blackness, your wit, your femaleness every day to the show. Do you think that's why the Tuckums and his friends over at Fox News are so scared of you, because you bring this powerful thing that we see and that we love? That's why we love you. You think that's why they're probably scared of you?
You know what? I've decided that to look at Tucker as a fan.
No.
Because he thinks about me all the time. He thinks about me more than I think about me. You know what I mean? I don't think about myself as much as he thinks about me.
Yeah.
I'm in his A block. I'm in his head.
I know.
I'm on their Twitter feed.
Not that I watch, but I see clips of them when people share it online and then they go off on him, you know, which they should. But
these right wingers would literally do an entire segment around something I tweet. I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
That is,
I've been thinking of you as an adversary. You're a fan.
He is a fan. That's why they talk about you in this show.
So I just want to thank him every day. Thank you, Tucker. Thank you for being my fan. I appreciate you.
Okay, I love that. I love that so much.
That you love me. What is that song? This is why I love you. I love you because you love me.
Yes, and that's exactly what it is.
Thank
then.
You.
Oh, my God. Did you hear that? Okay. you know, when you take a step back from everything you continue to create in your life, are you able to say, like, wow, like, I was able to achieve that. Like, I was able to dream big and I made that happen. What part of your life would you take out? Was it AM Joy? Is it the readout? Is it something with your family, your kids, your husband? Like, what is it that you could say, wow, I achieved that?
That's a great question, because I definitely think my family is, you have to put that first, right?
Yeah.
That I, you know, I am so blessed in this country where, to be honest, you know, to raise a black young man to adulthood and have them make it that far with all the police brutality and the hatred and, you know, the way that they're pushed back in society. My daughter, who is a young, fabulous, fierce LGBTQ little cutie, and she has made it through. You know, it's hard as a young person, you know, as somebody who, you know, had to kind of fight that extra battle besides being black and female in this country. So I'm just proud that my children have gotten where they've gotten. Mm. I'm proud that my husband and I, you know, have managed to make it. You know, the divorce rate, you and your husband, y'all are going to do it too. You know, we've been together 30 years.
Wow.
And so I'm proud of my family. That you have to put that first, and also just my larger family, that, you know, we have stuck together.
Yeah.
We support each other. We're here for each other. But career-wise, I have to say, I made something that I think everyone should do. I did a dream board back in 2004. when I had done this political campaign that had lost.
Yeah.
And so I was unemployed. You know, after the campaign is over and y'all don't win, you have to then start over from really nothing. And I'd given up my political column, my newspaper column to do this campaign, and we didn't win. And so I had to kind of figure out, what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do with my future? I gave up a good job in local TV to work on this campaign. We didn't win. We failed to oust George W. Bush, which was the mission that I'd set out to do. And so I made a dream board. And what was incredible about it was I looked at that dream board years later, and so much of it had started to come true. I really believe in it. I think when you write it down.
Oh, I have a vision board, yeah.
A vision board.
You have things on there, yeah.
Absolutely. So when you're,
I relate, I connect to this.
Isn't it real? I mean, you have to speak it into existence and write
it
into existence.
Put it on there. And every day when I go in the room, I see that vision board, and I'm reminded that you could achieve that.
Absolutely.
I mean, I could achieve
And I know you did that too. I mean, think about it. You wrote a letter.
Yeah, yeah. And look what happened to Oprah. And then look,
And I mean, and by the way, I have to say about Oprah, you know, to me, she is a role model for me. Because I, you know, I was saying to my producer on the way over here, this woman is the greatest interviewer to me in our business. She's
100%.
Somebody we all aspire to. Yeah. I know you do. I know I do. Yeah. And to think about the fact that you put on your vision board that you wanted to meet her and be in her space, and look what happened. So I think dreams, when they're written and when they're spoken, they become reality.
Thank you. And speaking of aspiring women, I know that when you were 12 years old, you told your beloved mother that you wanted to be a doctor.
I did.
And then, you know, years later, you went to Harvard. You got accepted for pre-med. But then I remember reading you took a year off. And you went to go live with your aunt, Dolly, I think. You went to go, took a year off. Yeah.
Good research.
I'm so excited to have you here.
What
happened that made you take a year off? What was it that said, you know what, I'm going to take some time for myself and figure things out and go live with my aunt? What happened?
Well, it was not a happy story. You know, when a West Indian kid tells their West Indian mom that you're going to be a doctor, it's like, you're going to be a doctor. I'm so proud. I'm so happy. You know, everybody gets into it and everyone commits you to it. But I think when I was a kid, I was just so devoted to my mom. You know, she was my best friend. We were very close. I was a middle child. So, you know, the middle child seeks attention. So I was always clinging to my mom. And I wanted her to be proud. My sister said she was going to be a lawyer. I said I was going to be a doctor. My brother, who was a little baby, he was going to be an architect. And my mom was so proud and excited about that I committed to it, but it wasn't my passion. Science wasn't my passion. And then when I was 17, unfortunately, my mom passed from cancer. And any desire I had to be a doctor evaporated immediately. I didn't trust medicine. I wasn't interested in being in a hospital. I would hyperventilate when I would go into a hospital. I was like, how can I do this career that I don't believe in, I'm not passionate about, and I just wasn't happy. So I went to Harvard about 22 days after my mom passed. And I probably should have taken the year off then. But I went and I tried and I was failing out of school. And you know, part of what had made my mom so proud was that I was going to Harvard. She was so excited, and here I was failing out, miserable. I was going, my sister was at Brown, and I would spend, you know, a lot of my time at Brown crying in her dorm. You know, it wasn't working. So I decided that rather than just soldier on, which is what, you know, they tell you to do, I decided to take some time off and really think and figure out what I wanted to do. So my Auntie Dolly, who's my mom's only sister, they were nine little Guyanese kids, and there were only two girls. And my Auntie Dolly, they called her Dolly because she was the baby. So she was like a little Dolly. So that's my auntie, Prudence. Her name is Prudence. So I went to live with Prudence in Brooklyn, and that's where I had started. You know, my mom and her sister had started off in East Flatbush. I was back in East Flatbush, hadn't been there since I was 2 years old. But they had remained super close. So my cousins were like my sisters.
Wow.
So I had, you know, sisters. My sister was at college. So I had, I had a group around me. I had a village that was very supportive, but that in some ways I needed to also break free of, because those expectations needed to be separated, you know, from what I had claimed I wanted to be. So I moved out after about a year of living with her, and I wound up living down the street from Spike Lee.
Wow,
I wound up in
Fort
Greene.
Reading that. Yeah, it's really
and
cool.
It was inspiring. I mean, there was a production, whether it was a music video or a film, something bohemian was happening in Brooklyn every day all around me. And I got caught up in the arts and thinking, look, when I was a kid, I wrote stories. I would tell my sister and brother stories to entertain them. I was the entertainer. I would draw. I was an artsy kid, not a sciencey kid. And so when I went back to Harvard, I decided I was going to lean in. I wound up majoring in film, in documentary film, and just went on a different path from where I started.
I'm really glad that you took that time for yourself. You know, I lost my mom a couple months ago, too, from cancer.
I'm sorry.
It was hard. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. And, you know, it took some time for me, and I'm still trying to understand the whole grief process. But when I read that about you, it reminded me to really take care of myself. And anyone who's lost someone, a parent or a sibling or someone, a loved one, you really have to take that time for you, because if you don't, you can just get lost in your work. And so what you did was a reminder to all of us. And I thank you for sharing that.
I appreciate that. And I know, and cancer is the devil. I mean, that's what took my mother, too. Yeah. And it's like, I think, you know, as you said, we don't take time to grieve, and we're kind of taught by this society that can be so harsh that you're supposed to keep going, that you're supposed to go on and be strong, and that's just part of our persona, you know, especially as a Black woman. Mm-hmm. We're sort of not even allowed to have, like, grief and softness and time, you know? And so I, you know, even though I was very young, I was 17 years old, you know, I had no idea what I was going to do with my life, but I just knew I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to commit to something that would make me even more unhappy.
Wow. I think also when growing up, you, was it in sixth grade? You went upstairs, I think I remember reading, and you ended up watching the Iran hostage crisis countdown that aired on Nightline, and which is really cool. You always had a love for news, obviously.
I did.
I mean, you are where you're supposed to be, which is so freaking amazing.
Yeah.
You did the work. You did the work, you know?
It's so wild because even saying I want to be a doctor was so ironic because all I did growing up, I was a super tomboy.
Yeah.
I was either playing sports with the boys, trying to like jump my Schwinn, which was not a dirt bike. And my mother was like, it's not a dirt bike. And I was like, wee! Crash.
You and know? You did crossword puzzles on Sunday. Remember reading?
Dude, crossword puzzles on Sunday.
Yes, I know.
Watching Knicks games.
I know.
And, you know, Bronco games. But when I wasn't doing that, I was watching the news. I loved the news. I was the little nerdy kid with the Coke bottle glasses. Watching the Sunday news shows.
That's
I
where you are where you're supposed to be.
Yes.
This is how we're going to end it. Okay, so we're going to have a little fun right now before you leave.
Okay.
So Patrick, get this.
Uh-oh.
We're going to, because you're an expert, so you're going to spin the wheel.
Oh,
we're calling
God.
This, hold on a second.
Look at this. This
hold
is so cool.
Hold on a second. Joy Reid, the future.
I love this.
You're going to just tell us 100 years from now, how will they be remembered?
Okay.
So spin it. And you're going to tell us, because you're good at predicting the future.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to spin it counterclockwise
because
these people are all counter democracy. So I'm going to go backwards.
Please do.
Okay. Because they're taking us back.
Please do. Okay.
Did I get Rudy?
Yeah, Rudy.
The worst mayor in the history of New York. I lived in New York under Rudy Giuliani. I think that the way Rudy will be remembered in history as a hair dye model. Only he wore the hair dye on his face rather than on his head.
We'll never forget
and for
that.
Drinking lots.
Mm-hmm. We know that now from listening to the hearing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, spin again. We'll do two more. We'll do two more.
Let's spin again.
I want to see what else you got. Let's see.
Is that Marjorie Taylor Greene?
You're close.
It's either Marjorie Taylor Greene or, oh, I got Mitch McConnell.
Okay,
Mitch McConnell. Unfortunately, I think what Mitch McConnell will be remembered for is singularly focusing his entire life on creating a Supreme Court that would destroy democracy for women, for LGBTQ people, for anyone who wants to vote for anyone other than Republicans, and for anyone besides the very, very super rich and corporate America. Mm-hmm. I think he will, forget Donald Trump, I think he will be remembered as the worst of the worst of American politicians because what he's done for that singular focus of the court has been to destroy everything else, including the United States Senate.
100%.
Won't be remembered well.
100%. And hopefully this quote will be in a book that they won't ban, so our kids can read it then.
Well, I might get DeSantis, and then I'll tell you whether he'll ban it.
Oh, my God, please get DeSantis, please. Please. Oh, my God, please. Please.
Look at God.
Okay. Why does God do this to us?
Look at God. They gave me Tuckums. Tuckums? How will Tuckums be remembered? I think Tuckums will be remembered as a man who failed as a host on MSNBC. And then failed as a host on CNN, and then decided he didn't want to fail a third time on the only other network that was left available to him. Mm-hmm. So he reached into the bag and pulled out the absolute worst stuff on 4chan and decided to put that on television, and that's how he succeeded. Mm-hmm. He is Rupert Murdoch's sort of non-related spawn, and I think that he's the embodiment of the rot that Murdoch has put into our system. It's the worst of what television is capable of doing.
It's the worst, really. It's awful. Here, just because I'm really, I want to see what you're going to say about him. Hold on. Here, Dr. Oz.
Oh my gosh.
And then we'll end it with this.
Okay, Dr. Oz.
What is going on?
He will be remembered as the one mistake Oprah Winfrey ever made. because she's otherwise perfect.
Of course. Okay. So we got to give you something now because you did so good. Oh my God. This is
a present.
You get something special because, and I'm going to quote, because I know that there's a quote I want to read that you said this in an article. You said, I usually throw on some earrings because that's the West Indian side of me. I can hear my godmother in my ear saying, put on an earring.
So yes, absolutely. Well, and if it's not her, it's my hair and makeup team because they literally will scream at me, where are the earrings? All right, here we go. Let's see.
And these are made specially for you, okay? We had them made specially for you.
Oh my goodness. And my makeup artist will love it there, that the box is pink, that there's pink in the box, okay? Oh, this is gorgeous. Just, and they say my favorite word.
Yeah, I know it's your favorite
they
word.
They say my favorite word.
It should be everyone's favorite word. Yes.
Vote.
Yeah.
Please. Please vote. This is gorgeous, Paolo. Thank you.
No, thank you.
This has been wonderful.
Oh, you've been
Can we
wonderful.
Just hang out all day? I don't want to do January.
No, you gotta go do a show. First of all, thank you. I think we're gonna do this. Why don't you tell everybody why it is so, because I know that your mother, when she became a citizen, you and I think your siblings went with her, if I remember reading that. So, and I know that she instilled in you why it's so important to vote, to save our democracy. So remind everyone, why is it so important to vote? It is more crucial now than ever.
Absolutely. The only real choice you have in democracy is who leads you. And if you leave that to someone else, you've also made a choice. Mm. So if you allow other people to decide who is going to lead this country, then you get what you get.
Yeah.
And if what you get is oppression, if what you get is loss and lack, you've gotten that by standing aside. So we owe it to ourselves, to our ancestors, to not stand aside. We fought too hard in this country, whether it is immigrants, whether it is Black people, Indigenous people, Asian Americans, Latinos, everyone who has built this country together. We fought too hard to let someone else decide what we can have and what we can be. Vote, please.
Please remember that.
Save our democracy.
I want to say thank you. It has been such an honor to interview you. I love you. You inspire me to be the best that I can be. Your story is a huge inspiration to me. You remind us all to be your authentic self, to get out there and dream big, and to have your vision board, to have your dream board, because anything is possible, and you are the perfect example of that. So I want to say thank you. Thank you for taking the time to come here and sit down with me and talk, because it is an honor. It is an honor to talk with you, Joy Reid.
Really. Thank you so much, Paolo. This has been amazing. It's been just wonderful to hang out with you, to hang out with your hubby, and just to have a little bit of this wonderful vibe, and that suit is every darn
thing. Did you hear that?
Thing.
Yeah, but look at her hair. Her hair is even cooler, okay?
I had to match your energy.
Okay.
Fabulous.
Okay, thank you. You guys, you know, you can watch a readout Monday through Friday. Money to Friend MSNBC. I love you so much.
Love you back.
All of you dream big. Thank you so much for watching us. Give us a thumb up if you liked it. If you didn't, move on to the next episode. All right, bye. We love you.
Bye.
Thank you,
that was
my
so
dear.
Fun.
I want to give you. You are so.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today on the A Spoonful of Paolo podcast. For tons more interviews or the video version of this episode, visit our website, aspoonfulofpaolo.com, or our YouTube channel. I'm Paolo Presta, and I hope you always remember to dream big.
Dream big.
Spoonful of Paolo. I love you, Oprah. Bye, everyone. We'll see you next time.